Happy Thursday and welcome back to Locked On Red Sox podcast. Thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen every single day. I'm your host, Massachusetts team insider Jake Ignaszewski, and I will also be joined by my co-host, NESN writer Lauren Campbell. Lauren and I had the opportunity today to interview former Red Sox top prospect Ryan Westmoreland. And he's going to talk a little bit about his experience growing up in Rhode Island, as well as getting drafted by the Red Sox and some of his success early on in his minor league career. And this is going to be part one of our interview with Ryan. So let's listen in to our conversation with Ryan Westmoreland.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are here with former Red Sox top prospect Ryan Westmoreland. So how are we doing today, Ryan?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So I just wanted to start off the episode real fast with this quote that I heard. And I think it goes perfectly with your sort of story and, you know, everything that you went through throughout your life. And it goes, you must not allow the clock and calendar to blind you to the fact that each moment is a miracle and a mystery. And I heard that today. And even when I just said it, it just gave myself chills. But I thought that the listeners would really like it. Yeah, I thought it would be a perfect way to sort of start off, you know, us talking about your incredible journey and your incredible story.
Uh-huh. It's a great one.
Appreciate it. So I want to start off sort of talking about a little bit, you know, how was the end of your 2021? How was the holidays? And how has 2022 gone so far, you know, in the 5 days that we've been in this year?
So far, so good. This past year, I got married and I have a 9-month-old daughter, so it's kind of her first everything over the holidays. So that was really exciting. And all the family got to see her. And, you know, due to COVID last year, all of them didn't get to see her. So it was nice to be able to all get together. And unfortunately, it looks like things are taking a turn for the worst COVID-wise. So just, you know, grateful to be here and have a family like I do and, you know, trying to stay positive.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on a solid 2021. That's obviously a lot to celebrate right there. The Red Sox also had a pretty good 2021, not as good as yours, but were you surprised that the Red Sox did as well as they did in 2021?
I wouldn't say surprised because I know a lot of them and I know that they're really, really good at baseball. You know, but as a fan, I certainly didn't expect the run that they made, especially in the first half. It was very impressive. And, you know, I'm not surprised because, like I said, I do know them and I know what they're capable of doing. But it was certainly a nice surprise seeing how well they did and the run they made against, you know, New York. And obviously the first half of the season was, I mean, I don't think anyone thought that was going to happen. So it was exciting.
100%. And for people that don't know, Ryan grew up in Rhode Island and grew up as a Red Sox fan. And I'm curious from all the, you know, personalities that were on the Red Sox 2021 team, was there anybody that you enjoyed watching the most?
I'm going to say Christian Vasquez, from the sole perspective of he's a really, really good friend of mine. He's obviously a very good baseball player, but I've always really rooted for him just because we have a very good relationship, like friends. We kind of came up minor leagues together. So I'm certainly always rooting for him. But, you know, I've always liked Hunter Renfroe. I loved the way he played in Tampa. And at San Diego, certainly upset that, or I wouldn't say upset that he's leaving because it's, you know, good for him. He deserves it. But we're getting Jackie Bradley in return, which another really good friend of mine. So I love the trade personally just because I love Jackie and what he brings to this team. And obviously being his friend, it's nice to have him back.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans were shocked by the trade. And I think Hunter Renfroe really kind of embraced Boston almost immediately and he became a fan favorite very quick with all the assists and everything in the outfield. So it was definitely people were upset, but then seeing Jackie Bradley come back, who was a fan favorite as well, yeah. They're like, I don't really know how to feel because it's...
Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, Hunter, he had an incredible year. I mean, all the assists, like you said, in the outfield, and then he had some huge hits and home runs. But, you know, we're getting the guy in return that's debatably the best defensive outfielder there is. And, you know, it's a tough trade because of how good Hunter did at the end of last season. But, I mean, you got to think about what we're getting in return, and that's just as good, in my opinion.
1,000%. Yeah, you had me shed a little bit of a tear when you brought Hunter Renfro. It honestly left my memory that he wasn't going to be on the 2022 team. I completely forgot about that trade because this offseason and lockout has been taking forever. Yeah. But I got to ask you sort of, what was your reaction during that Christian Vasquez walk-off in the ALDS against the Rays? Because that game, I actually remember watching it. I mean, it started really early in the day and then, you know, ended, you know, maybe at like 8 or 9 at night.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was an emotional roller coaster that night. But that was incredible. I mean, I was so excited that it was Christian. And I think I don't know if you guys have seen it, but one of the pictures that have gone around a lot of me and the minors are of me and Christian. So actually once that all happened, that picture got sent to me like a bazillion times. But I was so pumped up. I was so jacked up because I know him off the field, and I know the kind of kid he is, and he deserved that moment.
It's always good to see and hear about somebody like Christian Vasquez, who seems like a genuine person. I've only communicated with him in Red Sox press conferences, but mm-hmm. to hear like off the field that he seems like a very genuine person. I mean, his Instagram seems like a very good, family-oriented, just all-around good person that you want in your life.
Yeah, I like that too. I mean, it's such a, not, I wouldn't even say misconception about some of the athletes out there, but you know, you always love seeing a guy that you get to see his personality off the field. And I remember David Ortiz was like that too. You got to know David off the field. And yeah, it's a good thing because, you know, as an athlete, you want people to know how you are on the field, but more importantly, how you are off it.
I hope you guys have been enjoying our conversation thus far with former Red Sox top prospect Ryan Westmoreland. But Lauren just wanted to take a second to tell you about Built Bar.
But I want to tell you about Built Bar. You know me by now. You know how much I absolutely love Built Bar. And now that it's the new year, that means some New Year's resolutions are starting to kick in. And if yours is about getting fit, maybe eating a little bit healthier, make sure you include Built Bar in your plan. Built Bar is the best protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. It doesn't have that chalkiness, maybe that cardboard taste that some other protein bars have. And it makes it easy to stick to your resolution because it tastes so good. You will want to eat it, unlike those other protein bars, like I said, that can be a little chalky, a little cardboardy, maybe even a little waxy. It's just not good. Built Bar is not like that at all. There are so many flavors to choose from. There's raspberry, double chocolate, mint chocolate, and my favorite, cookies and cream. And Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate. So by like week 3 of your resolution, when eating healthy is getting a little bit tricky, you kind of thinking, where's the chocolate? Built Bar. Built Bar is where the chocolate is at. And we have an offer for you. Go to built.com, use offer code LOCKED15 for 15% off your order. That's LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com.
Definitely make sure that you check out Built Bar and use the code to get some discounts. Now let's get back to our conversation with Ryan Westmoreland. 1,000%. It's always really interesting to see what people are like, you know, outside of the game. And, you know, you brought up Jackie Bradley Jr. and Christian Vasquez as two guys that you played with during your minor league time with the Red Sox. I was wondering if there was any other teammates that you really enjoyed playing with during your time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot. You know, Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts were two of the best people I've ever met. Obviously, it's, you know, they're two of the best players in the major leagues right now. But I got to know them as friends and kind of like what we were talking about before. I got to know them off the field, you know, at my house, at their house during spring training, just kind of hanging out, playing ping pong and video games and, you know, nothing baseball related, just hanging out as friends. And they'll always be friends. They'll always be, you know, close to me, whether, you know, they're in LA or here in Boston. It's those kind of relationships are the ones that I'm, you know, always going to treasure.
That makes me wonder what sort of video games did you guys play, and who's the better video game player?
Well, we played Call of Duty. That was kind of the peak time of Call of Duty when it was coming up. I don't remember. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say Mookie was the best at everything just because he is the best at everything. I don't remember specifically, but I can make a good guesstimate that he's probably the best.
So he can bowl, play baseball, and play video games. So he's just like duality of a man.
Yeah, you name it. I mean, he's probably good at, you know, everything. Chess, you name it. He'll figure it out.
That's not surprising, just knowing how good and dominant he is at baseball. You were one of the top prospects. You were number 21 ranked on Baseball America's list of top prospects, and also playing in Boston. Is there, or did you feel any type of pressure as an athlete being named a top prospect?
Yeah, I did at first. You know, just being the New England kid, getting these rewards and rankings, and I felt pressure just because, you know, I felt like there were people out there that thought I was getting these accolades just because I was a Red Sox fan and from New England and all that stuff. And so I did feel a lot of pressure, not to mention, you know, I was a teenager in that list of prospects. So, it was definitely a lot of pressure there. But at the end of the day, I said, you know, let's just let my ability take care of itself. Growing up, I knew how the Boston media, I knew how, you know, bad performance didn't look good, and you don't want that, obviously, as a player. So I just said, you know, I'm not going to get into all that stuff and just go out and do what I do and let my ability take care of itself.
I think that's so smart because there's a ton of outside noise, especially in a major market like Boston. And kind of the more you can not necessarily tune it out, but not exactly listen, I feel like just sets you up so much better for the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just one less thing to worry about, obviously, the, you know, how you're looking towards the media. But yeah, like you said, in a market like Boston or LA or New York, you obviously want to stay out of the negative spotlight when you can. So just kind of putting your head down and going to work every day is, in my opinion, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's the perfect mindset. I think Bill Belichick would really like that mindset as well. That's usually what we hear from most of his players.
Yeah, well, you tell him to give me a call. I'll come in there and hang out.
I love it. Well, you like I also mentioned, you also grew up in Rhode Island as well. And I bet when you got drafted by the Red Sox in the fifth round in 2008, you sort of felt that pressure as sort of like a hometown kid that you had to live up to those expectations, especially growing up as a Red Sox fan as well.
Yeah. I mean, that was tough just because, you know, obviously it was a dream come true, but at the same time, you know, I'm in New England and I got hundreds of thousands of people just staring at me, and, you know, I'm an 18-year-old kid. So it was tough at first, and I was forced to mature through it, but I think I did. And I had a good first year in Lowell and Single A, and, you know, kind of was able to put all that stuff on me and like you had said, tune it out and kind of just play baseball.
Yeah, definitely. And then going into your second season is when things changed a bit for you. Mm-hmm. At what point did you kind of realize something was not right here?
Yeah, so it was, I mean, I was there and because I had a condo down in Florida, so I'd been working out every day there. And like early February is when people started to report, and we'd take, you know, live BP, scrimmage kind of things, nothing formal. So I would say late February, there was one day, or the night before I was actually playing video games, of course. I noticed my hand felt like it was asleep, but nothing hurt. So I kind of just brushed it off and said, you know, maybe my hand's just asleep. We'll see how it, you know, feels in the morning. And then when I got to the facility, we were doing like dynamic stretching. And I just felt really numb and weak and, off balance. So that's kind of the point when I realized, hey, No, my hand's not just asleep. There's something going on here. I had no idea what it was going to be, but I knew that, you know, the red flags were going off and I knew something wasn't right.
And when you like got your diagnostics and heard of this thing called cavernous malformation, funny enough, I remember first time I interviewed you, I had to say that to myself, like literally like 10 times to make sure I pronounced it correctly. Mm-hmm. But what was your first reaction when you first heard? What you were diagnosed with.
I mean, honestly, like I mean, I was 18, 19 years old. So when I saw the MRI and it was a big white golf ball looking thing. And, you know, I had no idea what that was. I knew it wasn't supposed to be there. I knew that, you know, whatever it was that white spot was not supposed to be on the MRI. But I had no idea what it meant, like for my career, like what it even was. So I just knew that, you know, by the look in the staff's face and obviously the person reading the MRI, I could tell that it was serious. I didn't know about surgery. I didn't even know what was the next step. But I could tell that it was a serious thing. And I, you know, when I called my parents, they obviously were upset, and that's kind of when it kind of sank in that something was going on.
I hope you guys have been enjoying our conversation with Ryan Westmoreland thus far, but I just want to take a second to talk to you about Bet Online. Bet Online would like to wish you a happy new betting year as we continue our march to the playoffs and beyond. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts.
At such a young age too, it's so hard to have such a positive mindset when you know something is wrong, when you're not exactly sure what it is. You probably have so many questions in that moment. Mm-hmm. Did you have a positive mindset going into that surgery when you decided that that's what you needed to do?
I did. I was always optimistic through all of this. You know, being such a passionate and driven kid in the first place, you know, my mindset was I'm going to beat this thing. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to get back out there, rehab and, you know, play center field at Fenway. And I felt that for a while. But obviously things happened and, you know, it is what it is. But I certainly was about as positive as I could have been through this whole thing. And I think that's a big reason why I am, you know, still here. Is because I had that mindset and that will and that drive to, you know, to rehab my butt off and to do everything I could to get back on the field. Unfortunately, I didn't. Well, I did kind of, but, you know, I didn't get to Fenway. But, you know, I gave it my best shot, certainly. I don't regret that.
1,000%. And especially like when you first found out, you know, you know, disease is left untreated, you can either be blind, paralyzed, or killed. Like, I mean, when you heard that, I bet it must have been a little bit difficult to keep that positive mindset. But how were you able to, you know, keep going to, especially after that first surgery, to try and get back, especially to your playing potential?
Yeah. But, I mean, that was a real tough conversation when he told me, you know, the what ifs, like what if all these things could happen. But like I said before, being the kid I was, I said, I'm going to, you know, option three, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to be fine, nothing's going to happen. But the reason I got back to where I did was, you know, I said to myself, no one's ever done this before. And if anyone in the world was able to come back from, you know, brain stem surgery, like what I had, it's got to be me. I kind of had that mindset, like the, you know, prove to everyone that I'm capable of doing this. And, you know, that's what kept me going, whether it was a good day or a bad day, is, you know, saying, you know, I'm going to be the guy that does this.
I think that's an incredible mindset to have. And, you know, again, being a teenager, thinking you may have your future lined up, and just being a teenager in general, you're still trying to navigate life and the world as a whole. You mentioned so many things that kind of kept your mind right, even though you had to relearn to do the smallest tasks. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like tying your shoes and, you know, everyday things that we probably take for granted just because it's like second nature to us. Right. But you were, like you said, you were able to get back on the field in a Red Sox Dominican Instructional League game. Just how did that feel, being able to at least do that at that point, having been through all you had been through?
Yeah, no, that was incredible, just because, you know, it was one of those situations where I could look back and say, you know, 8 months ago, I couldn't even see straight. And here I am playing against, you know, some of the best players in the world. So it was special, obviously very special, the fact that I had already gotten back there. I certainly wasn't up to, you know, 100%, like nothing happened. I obviously still had some issues that I was going to get through. But more importantly, you know, I could say to myself, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. You know, I've already made it back this far in this amount of time. Like, who's to say that I can't just keep this up? And who knows how long it'll be, but I'll be back and, you know, hopefully make it to the major leagues. So that was a very, very special time, and certainly one I'll always remember.
Oh, I bet. And for people who don't know exactly what cavernous malformation is, because I know that you're a big advocate for it, obviously, and trying to raise awareness about what it's all about. Can you explain it a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, it's basically a tangle of blood vessels. It's kind of like a blood clot, that bled out, and mine be on the brainstem. They could be anywhere in your head. Like, they're, you know, some people have like 30 of them and never know because they don't bleed. But mine, I had one that was on the brainstem, which is the worst spot to have it, and mine bled, which is obviously the most unlucky thing you can have. But the thing I found most interesting, that I think pretty much no one really knows, is these malformations are like birthmarks. So there's a good chance I've had this since I was born. It just decided, and, you know, in February of 2010, it decided that that's when it was going to bleed. You know, it wasn't like a tumor that grew. It was just always been there. You can't do anything like hit your head. Nothing is going to make it bleed, at least that I know of. But, you know, it's just an unlucky situation that I was in. But like I said, it's not very common, but it's a thing. It's out there, and a lot of people have them. And some people can't get surgery. I was lucky enough to get surgery. But some people aren't that lucky. So, it's certainly a cause that means a lot to me.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing a little bit of information, and just knowing that it could be something that you've had your entire life is, to me, a little scary, because like you said, it can bleed at any time. And it just one day decided that that was the day that it was going to happen. And thankfully that something set you off in order to be like, this can't be right here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because, well, it's certainly not funny. But like I said to you guys before, I was kind of tipped off that something was going on because my leg was numb, and I kind of had signs that something was going on. For my second surgery, it was the exact opposite, where I had zero idea, nothing felt off, no tingling, nothing. I was just doing a routine checkup at an MRI, and they get the call saying, you're going to Arizona. So that was probably more scary, just because I had no idea what was going on. I didn't feel any different. I was actually playing golf with my friends, but I felt great, and nothing. I felt like nothing was wrong. So it just goes to show that, I mean, yeah, like you said, at a drop of a hat, it's all, something's going on. Something could happen.
I hope you guys did enjoy part one of our conversation with former Red Sox top prospect Ryan Westmoreland. And make sure to check out part two tomorrow, where Ryan talks a little bit about how he got his unfortunate disease of cavernous malformation and what lessons he's learned, and also how he's still trying to make an impact in baseball today. Now, thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen every single day. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets. hosted by your boy Q with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available on all platforms. And also make sure you give Locked On Red Sox a follow on Twitter, because we are posting daily Red Sox content. Even though there's a lockout going on and even though it's the offseason, we still want to get you guys excited for the 2022 season. And we also try to get you involved in every single episode on our Twitter. So make sure, like I said, to go over there and follow us on that. Also follow myself on Twitter. It's at Jake Iggy. And also follow my co-host Lauren Campbell on Twitter. It's Three Laws Lauren with four R's. So thank you guys so much for tuning in to this episode of Locked On Red Sox. And like I said, make sure to tune in tomorrow for part two of our conversation with former Red Sox top prospect Ryan Westmoreland. We really appreciate all the support on all these player interviews, and we'll see you guys and talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace.